bodaciously delicious hello to you from, well, at this time, rainy Vancouver, where the action never stops, even as we change our socks. Haha. This is Tom, bringing you this month's issue of Tomicide Solutions, entitled, Are Your Follow-Up Messages Too Aggressive? I know you are probably busier than a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest, but also hope that you can find a few minutes to listen to this month's oratory masterpiece, which I've prepared with painstaking precision and hope you find some valuable points in it. Let's see what we have for today, what we have in store. Being an avid reader and learner, I sign up for many online programs to learn new bits and bobs. I do that in spite of knowing that as soon as the presenters get my email address, most of them will start bombarding me with follow-up sales pitches to get as much money out of my pocket as quickly as humanly possible. In general, women are less greedy, but, well, I bumped into a few really aggressive ones. And while I understand that and agree that the purpose of sequential autoresponders is to stay in touch with interested people who one day decide that our stuff is valuable and buy something from us, I also believe that the purpose of the process is sharing valuable information with these people and doing so, basically pre-selling our stuff in a dignified and professional manner. Now, I know that at this point some people may say that I'm a useless salesperson and that's why I need to do that, and they are 100% right. If I had to sell my services without properly marketing them first, well, I think I would rather lie down, pull a paper bag over my head and let a tree grow through my body. But that's only me. And follow-up messages and attempts to sell more are fine and dandy. Well, we all want to make more money in our businesses, and that's perfectly okay. However, what bugs me a little bit is the methods some of the so-called gurus use to extort money from their victims. I just can't find any better words. One of these methods is using aggressive and pushy but otherwise worthless messages. Just in the last few days, I received autoresponder messages with the following subject lines. They are really interesting. You may have had the same experience. Starting with, Tom, I'm puzzled. Then in the body of the email, the guy explained that he was puzzled because I hadn't given him money after one single pretty aggressive sales pitch in his autoresponder. So some of the subject lines. Tom, are you a loser? What most of these headlines or subject lines have in common, they start with my name. Which is, well, may have been fashionable years ago, but nowadays, well, it's borderline spam, really. Or some other brilliant subject lines. Tom, I thought you were smart enough to buy, basically to buy his stuff. Tom, how does it feel to be poor? Tom, are you struggling? Tom, are you dead broke? Tom, I guess you don't mind sinking your business. Of course, these folks are going to teach me in one single ebook how to make millions of dollars online, even before I can say Ying Tong Yid Lai Po. Ying Tong Ying Tong Ying Tong Ying Tong Ying Tong Ying Tong Yid Lai Po. As indicated by the famous Ying Tong Yid Lai Po song by the famous British comedy trio The Goon Show. Or, how to lose 140 pounds over the weekend without even getting out of bed. Their programs require no skills and no effort. They are as easy as falling off a log and filled with lots of fun. And I guess many poor souls fall for this kind of lunacy. Just imagine, rags to riches in one single ebook. Holy sausage, man. I would even say, holy mother of all sausages. That's just amazing. Or maybe it's just, well, plain scumbaggy. They are inviting me to their football games where they can pass me their slime balls, hoping that one day I, well, catch it and pay for it. Wow. And the other interesting thing these messages have in common is that they slam everything and everyone else out there. Only these people know these quote-unquote shocking secrets and no one else. Have you noticed it? Every copywriter in America is America's best copywriter. Every web hosting company is the world's most reliable web hosting company. Do these idiots actually believe their own bullshit? That's the question. So, with that in mind, so let's see how we can handle this follow-up process. First, let's look at the distribution of the target market in terms of readiness, willingness, and ability to buy your solutions. In his book, The Ultimate Sales Machine, Chad Holmes reports that some 30% of the market is ready, willing, and able to buy right now. And 7% of prospects are open to buying someday in the future. 30% don't even think about buying right now. 30% don't even think they are interested. And 30% not just don't think, 30% know for sure they are not interested in your stuff. Not now, not ever. So as you can see, only 3% of the market is made up by right now buyers. 67% are not now buyers, and 30% are never ever buyers. So if your follow-up message is too much pitch-based, you may engage a small percentage of the top 3%, but you may end up pissing off the majority of the 3% and basically almost all the 67%. While the top 3% are in buying mode, the other 67% are in research mode. And yes, if your follow-up messages cater for more for research and less for purchase, you may lose a few sales. But if it's the other way around and your messages are too pitchy and aggressive, you may lose almost everyone, and unsubscribe notices will start attacking you pretty ferociously. So the idea is to have a good balance of knowledge sharing and, well, offer sharing. I've recently read on a blog, I can't remember where, so I can't even give the attribute, but I've read it somewhere that copy without content is hucksterism. They didn't use this word, but something similar, and content without copy is charity. So the best choice is a healthy blend of both, depending where buyers are in their sales processes. And I believe we'd better err on the research side, that is, we assume that the reader is still researching. And this leads us to one more interesting point, the denial to acceptance continuum. It's basically the Kubler-Ross grief cycle, named after Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, MD, in her 1969 book on death and dying. She was a Swiss-born psychiatrist and a pioneer in near-death studies. Since most buyers are alive when you are marketing to them, why should we bother with near-death experiences? Well, because their decision-making process is pretty much the same. But depending on how they receive the possible bad news, basically bad news in a sense, in the book of Death and Dying, it's about receiving the bad news that, well, you don't have much left. In business, the bad news is that you've got problems in your business. So, depending how they receive the possible bad news, they respond differently. When an uninvited pain in the ass peddler says, "You are an idiot in trouble and I can save your dumb ass, just buy my stuff," that may not go down well, and most buyers force a "What? Me worry?" smile on their faces. Remember, it's a confrontation between a reluctant buyer and an overzealous seller right from the beginning. The buyer's guard is up, and the seller does everything in his power to penetrate the buyer's guard. Now we can re-examine this grief cycle. You can see the graph on the printed version of this newsletter. Stage 1, stability stage. Buyers believe everything is fine and dandy. Plastic surgeon throw away the scalpel. No improvement is possible. We are the best of the best. Stage 2, immobilization. Buyers hear the bad news and are initially paralyzed by it. "Oh shit, what are you saying? What's the evidence for that? Hell, what should we do?" The third stage is denial, trying to avoid facing reality by denying it. Denial is this stage's temporary defense for buyers, basically. "No, this can't happen to us. Not us. Our clients love us." Stage 4, that's the anger stage. Just like a frustrated champagne bottle, after blowing the cork and uncontrollably spewing its content all over the land, years of bottled up emotions come up from buyers, and the steam of anger is blowing from all of their body orifices. At this stage, buyers realize they can't keep denying reality. These people are very hard to interact with due to their turbulent feelings of rage and envy, basically. Rage because of their situation, and envy is because of, well, the competition situation. Number 5 is the bargaining stage. Buyers realize that there is a way out. They can do something about it. Number 6 is the depression stage, comprehending the full magnitude of the situation, fully understanding the problem. Number 7, the testing stage. Buyers and the key people sit down to start working on the solution, including maybe hiring external experts to look into the problem, diagnosing the problem and developing the solution. And number 8, the acceptance stage, is finally finding a way forward to overcome this problem. So it's an emotional roller coaster. And now the question is how buyers, or how we go through this roller coaster with buyers. You see, when you send out heavily pitched follow-up messages, you create a more intense immobilization. But you also send the reader into a more intense denial anger cycle. And after calming down, they may not forgive you and hit the unsubscribe button. But first, let's see how we want to go through this emotional upheaval. When you interact with buyers, either personally, face-to-face, or on the phone, you create an initial agitation level in them. Besides digesting your information, they have to keep their guards up to protect themselves from possible sales pitches and closing tricks. All in all, they are not exactly in the receptive state of mind. This is also called synchronous interaction because you transmit your information in person and your buyers digest your information in person. But now let's look at asynchronous interaction, in which you transmit your information through an automated system and your buyers digest your information in person and in peace with their guards down. Buyers still get agitated by what they read, because reality can be agitating, but now they don't have to worry about camouflaging their agitation in front of eager sellers. So as they read your information, they tend to nod in agreement. They basically agree that what they are reading may be happening to their companies. And that's what you want. You want that agreement. And since they don't have to put up with an external pressure of a seller breathing down on their necks, they are more agreeable to your points. Some sellers argue that this approach is too cold and impersonal. Maybe so, but at this point buyers are not interested in personal contacts. All they want to do is to read your information without personal interference from a salesperson. And this leads us to the next point of fiddling with immobilization levels. Big word, I can barely pronounce it. How to use your information to send readers into moderate immobilization that only makes them think about their situation but don't get them mad at you. Use valuable boardroom caliber information. Not technical information, but boardroom caliber information, business information, but with the most intense points referring to their industries, not to their companies. And there's a big difference. If you refer to their industries, you simply say there is room for improvement. But if you refer to their companies, you essentially call them incompetent. And you can only do that if your client are masochists, and that's what they want to be called. The key is that you have to use your valuable content to pre-sell your stuff while also managing the reader's grief cycle. The grief cycle indicates that your messages have impact on your readers' emotions too, and not only on their minds. This is the essence, really. This is the wasp's nipples. Not selling, sales pitch, but pre-selling, offering valuable and eye-opening content. The more value you provide in your content, the more people sell. The more value you provide in your content, the more your readers can sell themselves on the idea that you are the go-to dude or dudess in your specific topic, specific area of expertise. So, why is this pre-selling phase so important? Well, call me lazy, but by the time I connect with buyers, either face-to-face or on the phone, that is, I'm investing my precious time, I'd like to talk to buyers who are properly positioned, pre-interested, preempted, pre-inspired, pre-qualified, and predisposed to do business with me. No, it's not about pushing my stuff. It's just about talking to the right people. And that's a reasonable expectation, isn't it? The way I see it, if I'm selling coffins, I don't want to waste my time on calling neonatal nurses and doctors. Considering my product, newborns are not my main market. Business is about relationships, really. At the age of the peddler is over, and now we have to take some time to warm our audiences up to doing business with us. After all, if they don't come to us, well, they have many, many competitors to go to. And the best way of doing this is by offering valuable boardroom caliber information. No, you don't have to give away the store, but there is something in between. Besides, having some information doesn't give people the knowledge and the self-confidence to actually do the work. For instance, on my joint venture farms, all the core people know how to slaughter a bull and process him from moo to stew because I've taught them. But when the time comes, it's still me who does the work. Why? Because they know how to do it in theory, and I force them to do it once or twice, but having slaughtered and butchered a few hundred bulls over the years, for me it's cellular level skill. I have both the knowledge and the self-confidence to do the work. I think you can easily share 25% of your knowledge in the form of newsletters, follow-up emails, valuable content, teleclasses, then sell 50% of your stuff at affordable prices and sell the remaining 25% at premium prices. That's basically personal coaching consulting. So can you see why your business has an easier time to succeed if you also sell information products and professional services relevant to your product? And yes, it's fine to weave in some promotion into your follow-up messages, but the essence must be the intention of sharing valuable information so readers can come to their own decisions that your company is the bee's knees in of your industry, and it must be the single choice when the readers' companies are ready to buy what you sell. So, what can you share in these follow-up messages? Here are some ideas. Information technology trends and statistics. Impacts of various IT practices. Your concerns regarding events in the industry. Your company's in-house research and development. Information specific to the prospect's industry, company or situation. One statistic I use with my market is how traditional sales and selling undermine salespeople's health and personal lives. For example, 49% of salespeople say their profession contributed to marital problems. 44% say their profession contributed to failed relationships with colleagues and friends. 18% blame their profession for not finding a spouse. 72% blame their profession for holding them back from exercising. And 69% blame their profession for the weight gain, diabetes, and some other sinister illnesses. So it clearly shows that cold selling is a high stress, high health risk profession, and also high investment, low return activity. According to McGraw-Hill, one single face-to-face appointment costs the selling company some $350. In opportunity cost, meetings out of town cost over $1,000. And the good qualification process must be based on this qualification, really. Every step of the way, you are looking for reasons not to do business with your prospects unless they come through your specific process. This is vital. Buyers value processes and resent ad hoc improvisation acts from sellers. For example, when you are flying somewhere, you may know that your captain, the pilot, has been flying for 20 years and has flown millions of miles and has amazing amounts of experience, but you still find comfort in knowing that before getting into the cockpit, the captain has gone through his checklist to check the plane. And when he steps into the cockpit, he's going through another checklist to check the plane, the instruments and everything. So that's comforting even with 20 years of experience. This is what Earl Nightingale had to say about the topic many years ago. if instead of working harder on making more money, average business people should spend one more hour each day and every day in quiet contemplation of how to be of greater and more creative service to their clients, then they would be the richer for it. Well, so it's not just putting in more hours and working harder, but stepping back and thinking about how we want to do this follow-up process. It has to be a really well-orchestrated process, not just an ad hoc that, okay, write something and send it out and blast the list. And that 1 hour, good old early talking about, could be studying your pre-selling process. And that brings us to our summary. At some odd metaphysical level, your buyers know that the way you sell to them is the way you will serve them after starting the work. If they are uneasy with your sales process, then there is a good chance they will be uneasy with your collaboration process too. And they won't enjoy working with you. And that's what they want to stay away from. They are willing to talk to your salespeople when the time is right, but not before. They have to be warmed up, and that's what the good pre-selling process is all about. You can use this pre-selling process to establish your company as their go-to expert in your industry. But this approach also requires that your company has a niche market and a very specific capabilities. The We Do IT approach is far too broad. For which market? And what does IT mean? IT is really so broad that it's important that you slice it up and say that these are our capabilities. So remember, it's not about making one-off sale and grabbing the money. It's about establishing your company as the recognized and respected authority in your field, so buyers in your market can seek you out when they need help, so your people don't have to chase them like a fungible vendor. So that's all about it, really. Discussing follow-up messages, near-death experiences, grieving cycles, and how they relate to the whole follow-up process. So think about it and take a look at your own follow-up processes. How do your sales and marketing people follow up with the prospects? Do they create different follow-up messages depending where the prospects are in the buying stage? You can actually break down your buying stage based on this grieving cycle, because some people are at the initial stage, some people are at the end, at the acceptance stage. So you can have several sets of follow-up messages, and as you notice that people are stepping through this follow-up process, then you put them on a different set of messages, or you create one set of messages and you click them through this grieving cycle. So you can experiment with several approaches here. With clients, we've used both. It's easier to create one set of messages that clicks them through that grieving cycle, but later it's more sophisticated and more fine-tuned if you create several sets of messages for each stage of the grieving cycle. Because that way, you never know how long your readers are stuck in that cycle, and you can better customize the messages. And when they are ready, for every message you put in a call for action. And the call for action is basically a step that will take them into the next stage of the grieving cycle. So every call for action takes them to the next stage for the grieving cycle. So let's say you are the reader is in the anger cycle, and at the end of the message that is still addressing, that is addressing their anger, you put a call for action. When they are ready to, for the next stage, the bargaining stage, that call for action will lead them to another set of messages that are related to bargaining. And at the end of the bargaining messages, there's a call for action. And when they respond to that call, that will take them to the next set of messages that deal with depression. So you've got separate sets of messages for each stage of the whole grieving cycle. So it's a bit more sophisticated. It takes more time, but it's also more tuned into how your buyers are clicking through this grieving cycle. So think about it and see how you can use all this in your follow-up processes. And then hopefully you have a great month, rest of the month, and we talk in April.